supposed to seek. The temple complex here included more than one building, though most people would only visit the main structure. Moraes' instructions had included a map, so she knew the specific building she needed, one near the back, where the ardent healers saw to the sick and cared for people with long-term illnesses. "It will not be easy to enter," Iyatil said. "The ardents are protective of their charges and have them locked away in the back, kept from the eyes of other men. They will not welcome an attempt at intrusion." "The instructions indicated that today was the perfect time to sneak in," Shallan said. "I was to make haste to not miss the opportunity." "Once a month," Iyatil said, "all may come to the temple to ask questions or see a physician with no offering requested. Today will be a busy day, a day of confusion. That will make for an easier time infiltrating, but it does not mean they will simply let you saunter in." Shallan nodded. "If you would rather do this at night," Iyatil said, "perhaps I can persuade Moraes that the matter can wait until then." Shallan shook her head. She had no experience sneaking about in the darkness. She'd just make a fool of herself. But how to get in? "Porter," she commanded, sticking her head out the window and pointing. "Take us to that building there, then set us down. Send one of your number to seek the master healers. Tell them I need their aid." The tenor who led the Parshman, hired with Shallan's spheres, nodded brusquely. Tenors were a strange lot. This one didn't own the Parshman. He just worked for the woman who rented them out. Vale, with dark eyes, would be beneath him socially, but was also the one paying his wage, and so he just treated her as he would any other master. The palanquin settled down, and one of the Parshmen walked off to deliver her request. "Going to feign sickness?" Iyatil asked. "Something like that," Shallan said, as footsteps arrived outside. She climbed out to meet a pair of square-bearded ardents, conferring as the Parshmen led them in her direction. They looked her over, noting her dark eyes and her clothing, which was well-made but obviously intended for rugged use. Likely they placed her in one of the upper-middle nons, a citizen but not a particularly important one.
"What is the problem, young woman?" asked the older of the two ardents.
"It is my sister," Shallan said. "She has put on this strange mask and refuses to remove it."
A soft groan rose from inside the palanquin. "Child," said the lead ardent, his tone suffering. "A stubborn sister is not a matter for the ardents."
"I understand, good brother," Shallan said, raising her hands before her. "But this is no simple stubbornness. I think one of the void bringers has inhabited her." She pushed aside the curtains of the palanquin, revealing Iyatil inside. Her strange mask made the ardents pull back and break off their objections. The younger of the two men peered in at Iyatil with wide eyes. Iyatil turned to Shallan, and with an almost inaudible sigh started rocking back and forth in place.
"Should we kill them?" she muttered. "No, no, we shouldn't. But someone will see. No, do not say these things. No, I will not listen to you," she started humming.
The younger ardent turned to look back at the senior.
"This is dire," the ardent said, nodding. "Porter, come, have your Parshman bring the palanquin."
A short time later, Shallan waited in the corner of a small monastery room, watching Iyatil sit and resist the ministration of several ardents. She kept warning them that if they removed her mask, she would have to kill them. That did not seem to be part of the act. Fortunately, she otherwise played her part well. Her ravings, mixed with her hidden face, gave even Shallan shivers. The ardents seemed alternately fascinated and horrified. "Concentrate on the drawing," Shallan thought to herself. It was a sketch of one of the ardents, a portly man about her own height. The drawing was rushed but capable.
She idly found herself wondering what a beard would feel like. Would it itch? But no, hair on your head didn't itch. So why should hair on your face? How did they keep food out of the things? She finished with a few quick marks, then rose quietly. Iatil kept the Ardent's attention with a new bout of raving. Shallan nodded to her in thanks, then slipped out of the door, entering the hallway. After glancing to the sides to see that she was alone, she used a cloud of stormlight to transform into the Ardent. That done, she reached up and tucked her straight red hair, the only part of her that threatened to pop out of the illusion, inside the back of her coat. "Pattern," she whispered, turning and walking down the hallway with a relaxed demeanor. "Find him," she said, removing from her satchel a sketch of the madman that Marais had left in the tree. The sketch had been done at a distance and wasn't terribly good. "Hopefully, second hallway on the left," Pattern said. Shallan looked down at him, though her new costume, an Ardent's robe, obscured him where he sat on her coat. "How do you know?"
"You were distracted by your drawing," he said. "I peeked about. There's a very interesting woman 4 doors down. She appears to be rubbing excrement on the wall."
"Ew."
Shallan thought she could smell it. "Patterns," he said as they walked. "I did not get a good look at what she was writing, but it seemed very interesting. I think I shall go and..."
"No," Shallan whispered. "Stay with me."
She smiled, nodding to several Ardents who strolled past. They didn't speak to her, fortunately, merely nodding back. The monastery building, like most everything in Dalinar's war camp, was sliced through with dull, unornamented hallways. Shallan followed Pattern's instructions to a thick door set into the stone. The lock clicked open with Pattern's help, and Shallan quietly slipped inside. A single small window, more of a slit, proved insufficient to fully illuminate the large figure sitting on the bed. Dark-skinned, like a man from the Makabaki kingdoms, he had dark, ragged hair and hulking arms. Those were the arms of either a laborer or a soldier. The man sat slumped, back bowed, head down, frail light from the window cutting a slice across his back in white. It made for a grim, powerful silhouette. The man was whispering. Shallan couldn't make out the words. She shivered, her back to the door, and held up the sketch Marais had given her. This seemed to be the same person. At least the skin color and stout build were the same, though this man was far more muscled than the picture indicated. Storms. Those hands of his looked as if they could crush her like a kremling. The man did not move. He did not look up, did not shift. He was like a boulder that had rolled to a stop here. "Why is it kept so dark in this room?" Pattern asked, perfectly cheerful. The madman didn't react to the comment or even Shallan as she stepped forward. "Modern theory for helping the mad suggests dim confines," Shallan whispered. "Too much light stimulates them and can reduce the effectiveness of treatment." That was what she remembered, at least. She hadn't read much on the subject. The room was dark. That window couldn't be more than a few fingers wide. What was he whispering? Shallan cautiously continued forward. "Sir?" she asked. Then she hesitated, realizing that she was projecting a young woman's voice from an old fat Ardent's body. Would that startle the man? He wasn't looking, so she withdrew the illusion. "He doesn't seem angry," Pattern said, "but you call him mad."
"Mad has 2 definitions," Shallan said. "One means to be angry. The other means broken in the head."
"Ah," Pattern said, "like a spren who has lost his bond."
"Not exactly, I'd guess," Shallan said, stepping up to the madman. "But similar."
She knelt down by the man, trying to figure out what he was saying.
"The time of the return, the desolation is at hand," he whispered.
She would have expected an Azish accent from him, considering the skin color, but he spoke perfect Alethi.
"We must prepare. You will have forgotten much, following the destruction of times past."
She looked over at Pattern, lost in the shadows at the side of the room, then back at the man. Light glinted off his dark brown eyes, two bright pinpricks on an otherwise shadowed visage. That slumped posture seemed so morose. He whispered on about bronze and steel, about preparations and training.
"Who are you?"
Shallan whispered.
"Talanelli Lin, the one you call Stone Sinew."
She felt a chill. Then the madman continued, whispering the same things he had before repeated exactly. She couldn't even be certain if his comment had been a reply to her question, or just a part of his recitation. He did not answer further questions. Shallan stepped back, folding her arms, satchel over her shoulder.
"Talanel," Pattern said. "I know that name."
"Talan Elati Lin is the name of one of the heralds," Shallan said. "This is almost the same."
"Ah." Pattern paused. "Lie?"
"Undoubtedly," Shallan said. "It defies reason that Dalinar Kolin would have one of the heralds of the Almighty locked away in a temple's back rooms. Many madmen think themselves someone else."
Of course, many said that Dalinar himself was mad, and he was trying to refound the Knights Radiant. Scooping up a madman who thought he was one of the heralds could be in line with that.
"Madman," Shallan said, "where do you come from?"
He continued ranting. "Do you know what Dalinar Kolin wishes of you?" More ranting. Shallan sighed, but knelt and wrote his exact words to deliver to Marais. She got the entire sequence down and listened to it twice through to make sure he wasn't going to say anything new. He didn't say his supposed name this time, though. So that was one deviation. He couldn't actually be one of the heralds, could he?
"Don't be silly," she thought, tucking away her writing implements. "The heralds glow like the sun, wield the honor blades, and speak with the voices of a thousand trumpets. They could cast down buildings with a command, force the storms to obey and heal with a touch." Shallan walked to the door. By now, her absence in the other room would have been noticed. She should get back and give her lie of seeking a drink for her parched throat. First, though, she'd want to put back on the ardent disguise. She sucked in some stormlight, then breathed out, using the still fresh memory of the ardent to create,
"Ah!"
The madman leaped to his feet, screaming. He lurched for her, moving with incredible speed. As Shallan yelped in surprise, he grabbed her and shoved her out of her cloud of stormlight. The image fell apart, evaporating, and the madman smashed her up against the wall, his eyes wide, his breathing ragged. He searched her face with frantic eyes, pupils darting back and forth. Shallan trembled, breath catching. 10 heartbeats.
"One of Ishar's knights,"
the madman whispered. His eyes narrowed.
"I remember. He founded them, yes. Several desolations ago. No longer just talk. It hasn't been talk for thousands of years. But when?"
He stumbled back from her, hand to his head. Her shard blade dropped into her hands, but she no longer appeared to need it. The man turned his back to her, walked to his bed, then lay down and curled up. Shallan inched forward and found he was back to whispering the same things as before. She dismissed the blade.
"Mother's soul."
"Shallan," Pattern asked. "Shallan, are you mad?"
She shook herself. How much time had passed? "Yes," she said, walking hurriedly for the door.
She peeked outside. She couldn't risk using Stormlight again in this room. She'd just have to slip out. Blast! Several people approached down the hallway. She would have to wait for them to pass. Except they seemed to be heading right to this very door. One of those men was High Lord Amaram.
64. Treasures. Yes, I'm disappointed. Perpetually, as you put it. Kaladin lay on his bench, ignoring the afternoon bowl of steamed spiced tallow on the floor. He had begun to imagine himself as that white spine in the menagerie, a predator in a cage. Storms send that he didn't end up like that poor beast, wilted, hungry, confused. They don't do well in captivity, Shallan had said. How many days had it been? Kaladin found himself not caring. That worried him. During his time as a slave, he'd also stopped caring about the date. He wasn't so far removed from that wretch he'd once been. He felt himself slipping back toward that same mindset, like a man climbing a cliff covered in creme and slime. Each time he tried to pull himself higher, he slid back. Eventually, he'd fall. Old ways of thinking, a slave's way of thinking, churned within him. Stop caring. Worry only about the next meal and keeping it away from the others. Don't think too much. Thinking is dangerous. Thinking makes you hope, makes you want. Kaladin shouted, throwing himself off his bench and pacing in the small room, hands to his head. He'd thought himself so strong, a fighter. But all they had to do to take that away was stuff him in a box for a few weeks, and the truth returned. He slammed himself against the bars and stretched a hand between them, toward one of the lamps on the wall. He sucked in a breath. Nothing happened. No stormlight. The sphere continued to glow, even and steady. Kaladin cried out, reaching farther, pushing his fingertips toward that distant light. Don't let the darkness take me, he thought. He prayed. How long had it been since he'd done that? He didn't have someone to properly write and burn the words, but the Almighty listened to hearts, didn't he? Please, not again. I can't go back to that. Please. He strained for that sphere, breathing in. The light seemed to resist, then gloriously streamed out into his fingertips. The storm pulsed in his veins. Kaladin held his breath, eyes shut, savoring it. The power strained against him, trying to escape. He pushed off the bars and started pacing again, eyes closed, not so frantic as before.
I'm worried about you. Syl's voice. You're growing dark.
Kaladin opened his eyes and finally found her, sitting between two of the bars as if on a swing. I'll be all right, Kaladin said, letting stormlight rise from his lips like smoke. I just need to get out of this cage.
It's worse than that. It's the darkness. The darkness.
She looked to the side, then giggled suddenly, streaking off to inspect something on the floor, a little kremling that was creeping along the edge of the room. She stood over it, eyes widening at the stark red and violet color of its shell. Kaladin smiled. She was still a spren, childlike. The world was a place of wonder to Syl. What would that be like? He sat down and ate his meal, feeling as if he'd pushed aside the gloom for a time. Eventually, one of the guards checked on him and found the dun sphere. He pulled it out, frowning, shaking his head before replacing it and moving on.
Amaram was coming into this room. Hide! Shallan was proud of how quickly she spat out the rest of her stormlight, wreathing herself in it. She didn't even give a thought to how the madman had reacted to her light weaving before, though perhaps she should have. Regardless, this time he didn't seem to notice. Should she become an Ardent? No. Something much simpler, something faster. Darkness. Her clothing turned black. Her skin, her hat, her hair, everything pure black. She scrambled back away from the door into the corner of the room, farthest from the slot of a window, stilling herself. With her illusion in place, the light weaving consumed the trails of stormlight that would normally rise from her skin, further masking her presence. The door opened. Her heart thundered within her. She wished she'd had time to create a false wall. Amaram entered the room with a young, dark-eyed man, obviously a Lethi, with short dark hair and prominent eyebrows. He wore Colin livery. They shut the door quietly behind themselves, Amaram pocketing a key. Shallan felt an immediate anger at seeing her brother's murderer here, but found that it had quieted somewhat, a smoldering loathing instead of an intense hatred. It had been a long time since she'd seen Helleran now, and Balat had a point in that her older brother had abandoned them. To try to kill this man, apparently, or so she'd been able to put together from what she'd read of Amaram and his shard blade. Why had Helleran gone to kill this man? And could she really blame Amaram, when in truth he'd probably just been defending herself? She felt like she knew so little, though Amaram was still a bastard, of course. Together, Amaram and the Alethi Dark Eyes turned to the madman. Shallan couldn't make out much of their features in the mostly dark room.
"I don't know why you need to hear it for yourself, Bright Lord," the servant said. "I told you what he said."
"Hush, Bordin," Amaram said, crossing the room. "Listen at the door."
Shallan stood stiff, pressed back in the corner. They'd see her, wouldn't they? Amaram knelt beside the bed.
"Great Prince," he whispered, hand to the madman's shoulder. "Turn. Let me see you."
The madman looked up, still muttering.
"Ah," Amaram said, breathing out. "Almighty above, 10 names, all true. You are beautiful. Gavilar, we have done it. We have finally done it."
"Bright Lord," Bordin said from the door, "I don't like being here. If we're discovered, people might ask questions. The treasure, he truly spoke of shard blades?"
"Yes," Bordin said, "a whole cache of them." "The honor blades," Amaram whispered. "Great Prince, please, give me the same words you spoke to this one."
The madman muttered on, the same as Shallan had heard. Amaram continued kneeling, but eventually he turned toward the nervous Bordin.
"Well?" "He repeated those words every day," Bordin said, "but he only spoke of the blades once. I would hear of them for myself."
"Bright Lord, we could wait here days and not hear those words. Please, we must go. The Ardents will eventually come by on their rounds."
Amaram stood up with obvious reluctance.
"Great Prince," he said to the huddled figure of the madman, "I go to recover your treasures. Speak not of them to the others. I will put the blades to good use."
He turned to Bordin.
"Come, let us search out this place."
"Today?
You said it was close."
"Yes, well, that was why I brought him all the way out here, but
if he accidentally speaks of this to others, I would have them go to the place and find it empty of treasures. Come, quickly. You will be rewarded."
Amaram strode out. Bordin lingered at the door, looking at the madman, then trailed out and shut the door with a click. Shallan breathed out a long, deep breath, slumping down to the floor.
"It's like that sea of spheres."
"Shallan?" Pattern asked. "I've fallen in," she said. "And it isn't that the water is over my head. It's that the stuff isn't even water, and I have no idea how to swim in it."
"I do not understand this lie," Pattern said.
She shook her head, the color bleeding back into her skin and clothing. She made herself look like Vale again, then walked to the door, accompanied by the sound of the madman's rambling.
Herald of war, the time of the return is near at hand.
Outside, she found her way back to the room with Iatil, then apologized profusely to the Ardents there who were looking for her. She pled that she had gotten lost, but said she'd accept an escort to take her back to her palanquin. Before going, however, she leaned down to hug Iatil, as if to wish her sister farewell.
You can escape?
Shallan whispered.
Don't be stupid, of course I can.
Take this, Shallan said, pressing a sheet of paper into Iatil's gloved free hand. I wrote upon it the ramblings of the madman. They repeat without change. I saw Amaram sneak into the room. He seems to think these words are authentic, and he seeks a treasure the madman spoke of earlier. I will write a thorough report via Spanreed to you and the others tonight. Shallan moved to pull back, but Iatil held on.
Who are you really, Vale? The woman said. You caught me in stealth spying upon you, and you can lose me in the streets. This is not easily accomplished. Your clever drawings fascinate Marais, another near impossible task, considering all that he has seen. Now what you have done today.
Shallan felt a thrill. Why should she feel so excited to have the respect of these people? They were murderers.
But storms take her, she had earned that respect.
I seek the truth, Shallan said. Wherever it may be, whoever may hold it, that's who I am. She nodded to Iatil, then pulled away and escaped the monastery. Later on that night, after sending in a full report of the day's events, as well as promised drawings of the madman, Amaram, and Borden for good measure, she received back a simple message from Marais.
The truth destroys more people than it saves, Vale. But you have proven yourself. You no longer need fear our other members. They have been instructed not to touch you. You are required to get a specific tattoo, a symbol of your loyalty. I will send a drawing. You may add it to your person wherever you wish, but must prove it to me when we next meet. Welcome to the Ghost Bloods.
65. The One Who Deserves It. 1.5 years ago. What is a woman's place in this modern world? Yasna Colin's words read. I rebel against this question, though so many of my peers ask it. The inherent bias in the inquiry seems invisible to so many of them. They consider themselves progressive because they are willing to challenge many of the assumptions of the past. They ignore the greater assumption, that a place for women must be defined and set forth to begin with. Half of the population must somehow be reduced to the role arrived at by a single conversation. No matter how broad that role is, it will be, by nature, a reduction from the infinite variety that is womanhood. I say that there is no role for women. There is instead a role for each woman, and she must make it for herself. For some, it will be the role of scholar. For others, it will be the role of wife. For others, it will be both. For yet others, it will be neither. Do not mistake me in assuming I value one woman's role above another. My point is not to stratify our society. We have done that far too well already. My point is to diversify our discourse. A woman's strength should not be in her role, whatever she chooses it to be, but in the power to choose that role. It is amazing to me that I even have to make this point, as I see it as the very foundation of our conversation. Shallan closed the book. Not 2 hours had passed since Father had ordered Helleran's assassination. After Shallan had retreated to her room, a pair of Father's guards had appeared in the hallway outside. Probably not to watch her. She doubted that Father knew that she'd overheard his order for Helleran to be killed. The guards were to see that Melisse, Shallan's stepmother, did not try to flee. That could be a mistaken assumption. Shallan didn't even know if Melisse was still alive, following her screaming and father's cold, angry ranting. Shallan wanted to hide, to hunker down in her closet with blankets wrapped around her, eyes squeezed shut. The words in Yasna Kolin's book strengthened her, though in some ways it seemed laughable for Shallan to even be reading it. High Lady Kolin talked about the nobility of choice, as if every woman had such opportunity. The decision between being a mother or a scholar seemed a difficult decision in Yasna's estimation. That wasn't a difficult choice at all. That seemed like a grand place to be. Either would be delightful when compared to a life of fear in a house seething with anger, depression, and hopelessness. She imagined what High Lady Kolin must be, a capable woman who did not do as others insisted she must, a woman with power, authority, a woman who had the luxury of seeking her dreams. What would that be like? Shallan stood up. She walked to the door, then cracked it open. Though the evening had grown late, the two guards still stood at the other end of the hallway. Shallan's heart thumped, and she cursed her timidity. Why couldn't she be like women who acted, instead of being someone who hid in her room with a pillow around her head? Shaking, she slipped from the room. She padded toward the soldiers, feeling their eyes on her. One raised his hand. She didn't know the man's name. Once she'd known all of the guards' names. Those men whom she'd grown up with had been replaced now. "My father will need me," she said, not stopping at the guard's gesture. Though he was light-eyed, she did not need to obey him. She might spend most of every day in her rooms, but she was still of a much higher rank than he. She walked by the men, trembling hands clenched tight. They let her go. When she passed her father's door, she heard soft weeping inside. Melisse still lived, thankfully. She found father in the feast hall, sitting alone with both fire pits roaring full of flames. He slumped at the high table, lit by harsh light, staring at the tabletop. Shallan slipped into the kitchen before he noticed her and mixed his favorite, deep violet wine, spiced with cinnamon and warmed against the chill day. He looked up as she walked back into the feast hall. She set the cup before him, looking into his eyes. No darkness there today. Just him. That was very rare these days.
"They won't listen, Shallan," he whispered. "Nobody will listen. I hate that I have to fight my own house. They should support me."
He took the drink.
"Wakim just stares at the wall half the time. Jushu is worthless, and Balat fights me every step. Now Melisse, too."
"I will speak to them," Shallan said. He drank the wine, then nodded.
"Yes, yes, that would be good. Balat is still out there with those cursed axe-hound corpses. I'm glad they're dead. That litter was full of runts. He didn't need them anyway."
Shallan stepped into the chill air. The sun had set, but lanterns hung on the eaves of the manor house. She had rarely seen the gardens at night, and they took on a mysterious cast in the darkness. Vines looked like fingers reaching from the void, seeking something to grab and pull away into the night. Balat lay on one of the benches. Shallan's feet crunched on something as she stepped up to him. Claws from kremlings pulled free of their bodies one after another, then tossed to the ground. She shivered.
"You should go," she said to Balat. He sat up.
"What?"
"Father can no longer control himself," Shallan said softly. "You need to leave while you can. I want you to take Melisse with you."
Balat ran his hand through his mess of curly dark hair.
"Melisse? Father will never let her go. He'd hunt us down."
"He'll hunt you anyway," Shallan said. "He hunts Helleran. Earlier today he ordered one of his men to find our brother and assassinate him."
"What?"
Balat stood.
"That bastard. I'll... I...
He looked to Shallan in the darkness, face lit by starlight. Then he crumpled, sitting back down, holding his head in his hands.
I'm a coward, Shallan, he whispered. Oh, Stormfather, I'm a coward. I won't face him. I can't.
Go to Helleran, Shallan said. Could you find him if you needed to?
Yes. He left me the name of a contact in Valaf who could put me in touch with him.
Take Melisse and Elita. Go to Helleran.
I won't have time to find Helleran before Father catches up.
Then we will contact Helleran, Shallan said. We will make plans for you to meet him, and you can schedule your flight for a time when Father is away. He is planning another trip to Vaidenar a few months from now. Leave when he's gone. Get a head start.
Balat nodded.
Yes. Yes, that is good.
I will draft a letter to Helleran, Shallan said. We need to warn him about Father's assassins, and we can ask him to take the three of you in.
You shouldn't have to do this, small one,
Balat said, head down.
I'm the eldest after Helleran. I should have been able to stop Father by now, somehow.
Take Melisse away, Shallan said. That will be doing enough. He nodded. Shallan returned to the house, passing Father mulling over his disobedient family, and fetched some things from the kitchen. Then she returned to the steps and looked upward. Taking a few deep breaths, she went over what she would say to the guards if they stopped her. Then she raced up them and opened the door to her father's sitting room.
Wait,
the hallway guard said.
He left orders. Nobody in or out.
Shallan's throat tightened, and even with her practice, she stammered as she spoke. I just talked to him. He wants me to speak with her.
The guard inspected her, chewing on something. Shallan felt her confidence wilt, heart racing. Confrontation. She was as much a coward as Balat. He gestured to the other guard who went downstairs to check. He eventually returned, nodding, and the first man reluctantly waved for her to continue. Shallan entered. Into the place. She had not entered this room in years. Not since... She raised a hand, shading her eyes against the light coming from behind the painting. How could Father sleep in here? How was it that nobody else looked? Nobody else cared? That light was blinding. Fortunately, Melisse was curled in an easy chair facing that wall, so Shallan could put her back to the painting and obstruct the light. She rested a hand on her stepmother's arm. She didn't feel that she knew Melisse, despite years living together. Who was this woman who would marry a man everyone whispered had killed his previous wife? Melisse oversaw Shallan's education, meaning she searched for new tutors each time the women fled. But Melisse herself couldn't do much to teach Shallan. One could not teach what one did not know.
Mother? Shallan asked.
She used the word.
Melisse looked. Despite the blazing light of the room, Shallan saw the woman's lip was split and bleeding. She cradled her left arm.
Yes, it was broken.
Shallan took out the gauze and cloth she had fetched from the kitchen, then began to wipe down the wounds. She would have to find something to use as a splint for that arm.
Why doesn't he hate you?
Melisse said harshly.
He hates everyone but you.
Shallan dabbed at the woman's lip.
Stormfather, why did I come to this cursed household?
Melisse shuddered.
He'll kill us all. One by one, he'll break us and kill us. There's a darkness inside of him. I've seen it, behind his eyes, a beast.
You're going to leave, Shallan said softly. Melisse barked a laugh.
He'll never let me go. He never lets go of anything.
You're not going to ask, Shallan whispered. Balat is going to run and join Helleran, who has powerful friends. He's a shard bearer. He'll protect the both of you.
We'll never reach him, Melisse said. And if we do, why would Helleran take us in? We have nothing.
Helleran is a good man. Melisse twisted in her seat, staring away from Shallan, who continued her ministrations. The woman whimpered when Shallan bound her arm, but wouldn't respond to questions. Finally, Shallan gathered up the bloodied cloths to throw away.
If I go, Melisse whispered, and Balat with me, who will he hate? Who will he hit? Maybe you, finally, the one who actually deserves it?
Maybe, Shallan whispered, then left.
66. Storm Blessings. Is not the destruction we have wrought enough? The worlds you now tread bear the touch and design of Edonalsium. Our interference so far has brought nothing but pain. Feet scraped on the stone outside of Kaladin's cage, one of the jailers checking on him again. Kaladin continued to lie motionless with closed eyes and did not look. In order to keep the darkness at bay, he had begun planning. What would he do when he got out? When he got out? He had to tell himself that forcibly. It wasn't that he didn't trust Dalinar. His mind, though. His mind betrayed him, and whispered things that were not true. Distortions. In his state, he could believe that Dalinar lied. He could believe that the High Prince secretly wanted Kaladin in prison. Kaladin was a terrible guard, after all. He'd failed to do anything about the mysterious countdowns scrawled on walls, and he'd failed to stop the assassin in white. With his mind whispering lies, Kaladin could believe that Bridge Four was happy to be rid of him, that they pretended they wanted to be guards just to make him happy. They secretly wanted to go on with their lives, lives they'd enjoy without Kaladin spoiling them. These untruths should have seemed ridiculous to him. They didn't. Clink. Kaladin snapped his eyes open, growing tense. Had they come to take him? To execute him? As the king wished? He leaped to his feet, coming down in a battle stance, the empty bowl from his meal held to throw. The jailer at the cell door stepped back, eyes widening.
"Storms, man," he said. "I thought you were asleep." "Well, your time is served. King signed a pardon today. They didn't even strip your rank or position."
The man rubbed his chin, then pulled the cell door open.
"Guess you're lucky."
Lucky. People always said that about Kaladin. Still, the prospect of freedom forced away the darkness inside of him, and Kaladin approached the door. Wary. He stepped out, the guard backing away.
"You are a distrustful one, aren't you?"
the jailer said. A light eyes of low rank.
"Guess that makes you a good bodyguard."
The man gestured for Kaladin to leave the room first. Kaladin waited. Finally, the guard sighed.
"Right then."
He walked out the doorway into the hall beyond. Kaladin followed, and with each step felt himself traveling back a few days in time. Shut the darkness away. He wasn't a slave. He was a soldier. Captain Kaladin. He'd survived this, what had it been? 2-3 weeks? This short time back in a cage. He was free now. He could return to his life as a bodyguard. But one thing had changed. "Nobody will ever, ever do this to me again. Not king or general, not bright lord or bright lady. He would die first." They passed a leeward window. Kaladin stopped to breathe in the cool, fresh scent of open air. The window gave an ordinary, mundane view of the camp outside, but it seemed glorious. A small breeze stirred his hair, and he let himself smile, reaching a hand to his chin. Several weeks' growth. He'd have to let Rock shave that.
"Here," the jailer said. "He's free. Can we finally be done with this farce, Your Highness?"
"Your Highness?" Kaladin turned down the hallway to where the guard had stopped at another cell, one of the larger ones set into the hallway itself. Kaladin had been put in the deepest cell, away from the windows. The jailer twisted a key in the lock of the wooden door, then pulled it open. Adolin Colin, wearing a simple, tight uniform, stepped out. He also had several weeks of growth on his face, though the beard was blonde, speckled black. The princeling took a deep breath, then turned toward Kaladin and nodded.
"He locked you away?"
Kaladin said, baffled.
"How? What?"
Adolin turned to the jailer. "Were my orders followed?"
"They wait in the room just beyond, Bright Lord,"
the jailer said, sounding nervous. Adolin nodded, moving in that direction. Kaladin reached the jailer, taking him by the arm.
"What is happening? The king put Dalinar's heir in here?"
"The king didn't have anything to do with it," the jailer said. "Bright Lord Adolin insisted. So long as you were in here, he wouldn't leave. We tried to stop him, but the man's a prince. We can't storm and make him do anything, not even leave. He locked himself away in the cell and we just had to live with it."
"Impossible." Kaladin glanced at Adolin, who walked slowly down the hallway. The prince looked a lot better than Kaladin felt. Adolin had obviously seen a few baths, and his prison cell had been much larger, with more privacy. It had still been a cell. "That was the disturbance I heard," Kaladin thought. "On that day, early after I was imprisoned, Adolin came and shut himself in." Kaladin jogged up to the man.
"Why?"
"Didn't seem right, you in here," Adolin said, eyes forward.
"I ruined your chance to duel Sadeus."
"I'd be crippled or dead without you," Adolin said. "So I wouldn't have had the chance to fight Sadeus anyway."
The prince stopped in the hallway and looked at Kaladin. "Besides, you saved Renarin."
"It's my job," Kaladin said.
"Then we need to pay you more, bridge boy," Adolin said, "because I don't know if I've ever met another man who would jump unarmored into a fight among six shardbearers."
Kaladin frowned.
"Wait, are you wearing cologne? In prison?"
"Well, there was no need to be barbaric just because I was incarcerated."
"Storms, you're spoiled," Kaladin said, smiling.
"I'm refined, you insolent farmer," Adolin said.
Then he grinned.
"Besides, I'll have you know that I had to use cold water for my baths while here."
"Poor boy."
"I know."
Adolin hesitated, then held out a hand. Kaladin clasped it.
"I'm sorry," he said, "for ruining the plan."
"Bah, you didn't ruin it," Adolin said. "Elikar did that. You think he couldn't have simply ignored your request and proceeded, letting me expand on my challenge to Sadeus? He threw a tantrum instead of taking control of the crowd and pushing forward. Storming man."
Kaladin blinked at the audacious tone, then glanced toward the jailer, who stood a distance behind, obviously trying to look inconspicuous.
"The things you said about Amaram," Adolin said, "were they true?"
"Every one."
Adolin nodded.
"I've always wondered what that man was hiding."
He continued walking.
"Wait," Kaladin said, jogging to catch up. "You believe me?"
"My father," Adolin said, "is the best man I know, perhaps the best man alive. Even he loses his temper, makes bad judgment calls, and has a troubled past. Amaram never seems to do anything wrong. If you listen to the stories about him, it's like everyone expects him to glow in the dark and piss nectar. That stinks to me of someone who works too hard to maintain his reputation."
"Your father says I shouldn't have tried to duel him."
"Yeah," Adolin said, reaching the door at the end of the hallway. "Dueling is formalized in a way I suspect you just don't get. A Dark Eyes can't challenge a man like Amaram, and you certainly shouldn't have done it like you did. It embarrassed the king, like spitting on a gift he'd given you."
Adolin hesitated.
"Of course, that shouldn't matter to you anymore. Not after today."
Adolin pushed open the door. Beyond, most of the men of Bridge Four crowded into a small room where the jailers obviously spent their days. A table and chairs had been shoved to the corner to make room for the 20-something men who saluted Kaladin as the door opened. Their salutes dissolved immediately as they started to cheer. That sound. That sound quashed the darkness until it vanished completely. Kaladin found himself smiling as he stepped out to meet them, taking hands, listening to Rock make a wisecrack about his beard. Renarin was there in his Bridge Four uniform, and he immediately joined his brother, speaking to him quietly in a jovial way, though he had out his little box that he liked to fidget with. Kaladin glanced to the side. Who were those men beside the wall? Members of Adolin's retinue. Was that one of Adolin's armorers? They carried some items draped with sheets. Adolin stepped into the room and loudly clapped his hands, quieting Bridge Four.
"It turns out," Adolin said, "that I'm in possession of not one, but two new shard blades and three sets of plate. The Colin Princedom now owns a quarter of the shards in all of Alethkar, and I've been named dueling champion. Not surprising, considering Relis was on a caravan back to Alethkar the night after our duel, sent by his father in an attempt to hide the shame of being beaten so soundly. One complete set of those shards is going to General Kahl, and I've ordered two of the sets of plate given to appropriate light eyes of rank in my father's army."
Adolin nodded toward the sheets.
"That leaves one full set. Personally, I'm curious to know if the stories are true. If a dark eyes bonds a shard blade, will his eyes change color?"
Kaladin felt a moment of sheer panic. Again. It was happening again. The armorers removed the sheets, revealing a shimmering, silvery blade. Edged on both sides, a pattern of twisting vines ran up its center. At their feet, the armorers uncovered a set of plate, painted orange, taken from one of the men Kaladin had helped defeat. "Take these shards and everything changed." Kaladin immediately felt sick, almost cripplingly so. He turned back to Adolin.
"I can do with these as I wish?"
"Take them," Adolin said, nodding. "They are yours."
"Not anymore," Kaladin said, pointing toward one of the members of Bridge Four. "Moash, take these. You're now a shard bearer."
All of the color drained from Moash's face. Kaladin prepared himself. "Last time..." He flinched as Adolin grabbed him by the shoulder, but the tragedy of Amaram's army did not repeat. Instead, Adolin yanked Kaladin back into the hallway, holding up a hand to stop the bridgeman from talking.
"Just a second," Adolin said. "Nobody move."
Then, in a quieter voice, he hissed to Kaladin,
"I'm giving you a shard blade and shard plate."
"Thank you," Kaladin said. "Moash will use them well. He's been training with Zyle."
"I didn't give them to him. I gave them to you."
"If they're really mine, then I can do with them as I wish. Or are they not really mine?"
"What's wrong with you?" Adolin said. "This is the dream of every soldier, dark-eyed or light. Is this out of spite? Or is it..."
Adolin seemed completely baffled.
"It's not out of spite," Kaladin said, speaking softly. "Adolin, those blades have killed too many people I love. I can't look at them, can't touch them, without seeing blood." "You'd be a light-eyed," Adolin whispered. "Even if it didn't change your eye color, you'd count as one. Shardbearers are immediately of the fourth dawn. You could challenge Amaram. Your whole life would change."
"I don't want my life to change because I've become a light-eyes," Kaladin said. "I want the lives of people like me, like I am now, to change.
This gift is not from me, Adolin. I'm not trying to spite you or anyone else. I just don't want a shard blade."
"That assassin is going to come back," Adolin said. "We both know it. I'd rather have you there with shards to back me up.
I'll be more useful without them."
Adolin frowned.
"Let me give the shards to Moash," Kaladin said.
You saw, on that field, that I can handle myself fine, without a blade and plate. If we shard up one of my best men, there will be three of us to fight him, not just two.
Adolin looked into the room, then skeptically back at Kaladin.
You are crazy, you realize.
I'll accept that.
Fine, Adolin said, striding back into the room. You, Moash, was it? I guess those shards are yours now. Congratulations. You now outrank 90% of Alethkar. Pick yourself a family name and ask to join one of the houses under Dalinar's banner, or start your own if you are inclined.
Moash glanced at Kaladin for confirmation. Kaladin nodded. The tall bridgeman walked to the side of the room, reaching out a hand to rest his fingers on the shard blade. He ran those fingers all the way down to the hilt, then seized it, lifting the blade in awe. Like most, it was enormous, but Moash held it easily in one hand. The Heliodor set into the pommel flashed with a burst of light. Moash looked to the others of Bridge Four, a sea of wide eyes and speechless mouths. Glory Spren rose around him, a spinning mass of at least 24 spheres of light.
His eyes, Lopin said. Shouldn't they be changing?
If it happens, Adolin said, it might not be until he's bonded the thing. That takes a week.
Put the plate on me,
Moash said to the armorers, urgent as if he feared it would be taken from him.
Enough of this,
Rock said as the armorers began to work, his voice filling the room like captive thunder.
We have party to give. Great Captain Kaladin, storm-blessed and dweller in prisons, you will come eat my stew now. Ha! I have been cooking it as long as you were locked away.
Kaladin let the bridgemen usher him out into the sunlight, where a crowd of soldiers waited, including many of the bridgemen from other crews. These cheered, and Kaladin caught sight of Dalinar waiting off to the side. Adolin moved to join his father, but Dalinar watched Kaladin. What did that look mean? So pensive. Kaladin looked away, accepting the greetings of bridgemen as they clasped his hand and clapped him on the back.
What did you say, Rock?
Kaladin said. You cooked a stew for each day I was locked in prison?
No, Teft said, scratching his beard. The storming horn eater has been cooking a single pot, letting it simmer for weeks now. He won't let us try it and insists on getting up at night and tending it.
His celebratory stew,
Rock said, folding his arms.
Must simmer a long time.
Well, let's get to it then, Kaladin said. I could certainly use something better than prison food.
The men cheered, piling off toward their barrack.
As they moved, Kaladin grabbed Teft by the arm. How did the men take it? He asked.
My imprisonment.
There was talk of breaking you out, Teft admitted softly. I beat some sense into them. Ain't no good soldier who hasn't spent a day or two locked up. It's part of the job. They didn't demote you, so they just wanted to slap your wrist a little. The men saw the truth of it.
Kaladin nodded. Teft glanced at the others.
There's quite a lot of anger among them about this Amaram fellow, and a lot of interest. Anything about your past gets them talking, you know.
Lead them back to the barrack, Kaladin said. I'll join you in a moment.
Don't take too long, Teft said. The lads have been guarding this doorway for 3 weeks now. You owe them their celebration.
I'll be along, Kaladin said. I just want to say a few things to Moash. Teft nodded and jogged off to wrangle the others. The prison's front room felt empty when Kaladin walked back in. Only Moash and the armorers remained. Kaladin walked up to them, watching Moash make a fist with his gauntlet.
I'm still having trouble believing this, Cal,
Moash said as the armorers fit on his breastplate.
Storms! I'm now worth more than some kingdoms.
I wouldn't suggest selling the shards, at least not to a foreigner, Kaladin said. That sort of thing can be considered treason.
Sell?
Moash said, looking up sharply. He made another fist.
Never!
He smiled, a grin of pure joy as the breastplate locked into place.
I'll help him with the rest, Kaladin said to the armorers. They withdrew reluctantly, leaving Kaladin and Moash alone. He helped Moash fit one of the pauldrons to his shoulder. I've had a lot of time to think in there, Kaladin said.
I can imagine.
The time led me to a few decisions, Kaladin said as the section of plate locked into place. One is that your friends are right. Moash turned to him sharply.
So?
So tell them I agree with their plan, Kaladin said. I'll do what they want me to in order to help them accomplish their task. The room grew strangely still. Moash took him by the arm.
I told them you'd see.
He gestured to the plate he wore.
This will help, too, with what we must do. And once we've finished, I think a certain man you challenged might need the same treatment.
I only agree, Kaladin said, because it's for the best. For you, Moash, this is about revenge, and don't try to deny it. I really think it is what Alethkar needs. Maybe what the world needs.
Oh, I know, Moash said, putting on the helmet, visor up.
He took a deep breath, then took a step and stumbled, nearly crashing to the ground. He steadied himself by grabbing a table, which he crunched beneath his fingers, the wood splitting. He stared at what he'd done, then laughed.
This is going to change everything. Thank you, Kaladin. Thank you.
Let's get those armorers and help you take it off, Kaladin said.
No. You go to Rock's storming feast. I'm going to the sparring grounds to practice. I won't take this off until I can move in it naturally.
Having seen how much work Renarin was putting into learning his plate, Kaladin suspected that might take longer than Moash wanted. He didn't say anything, instead stepping back out into the sunlight. He enjoyed that for a moment, eyes closed, head toward the sky. Then he jogged off to rejoin Bridge 4. 67. Spit and Bile. My path has been chosen very deliberately. Yes, I agree with everything you have said about Rays, including the severe danger he presents. Dalinar stopped on the switchbacks down from the pinnacle, Navani at his side. In the waning light, they watched a river of men flowing back into the war camps from the shattered plains. The armies of Bethab and Thanadol were returning from their plateau run following their high princes, who had probably gotten back somewhat earlier. Down below, a rider approached the pinnacle, likely with news for the king on the runs. Dalinar looked to one of his guards. He had four tonight, two for him, two for Navani, and gestured.
"You want the details, Brightlord?" asked the bridgeman.
"Please."
The man jogged off down the switchbacks. Dalinar watched him go, thoughtful. These men were remarkably disciplined, considering their origin, but they were not career soldiers. They did not like what he had done in throwing their captain into prison. He suspected they wouldn't let it become a problem. Captain Kaladin led them well. He was the exact type of officer Dalinar looked for. The kind that showed initiative not because of a desire for advancement, but because of the satisfaction of a job well done. Those kinds of soldiers often had rocky starts until they learned to keep their heads. Storms. Dalinar himself had needed similar lessons pounded into him at various points in his life. He continued with Navani down the switchbacks, walking slowly. She looked radiant tonight, hair done with sapphires that glowed softly in the light. Navani liked these strolls together, and they were in no hurry to arrive at the feast.
I keep thinking, Navani said, continuing their previous conversation, that there should be a way to use Fabrials as pumps. You have seen the gemstones built to attract certain substances, but not others. It is most useful with something like smoke above a fire. Could we make this work with water?
Dalinar grunted, nodding.
More and more buildings in the war camps are plumbed, she continued, after the Carbronthian manner, but those use gravity itself as a way to conduct the liquid through their piping.
I imagine true motion, with gemstones at the ends of piping segments, to pull water through at a flow, against the pull of the earth, he grunted again. We made a breakthrough in the design of new shard blades the other day.
What? Really? He asked. What happened? How soon will you have one ready?
She smiled, arm around his.
What?
Just seeing if you are still you, she said. Our breakthrough was realizing that the gemstones in the blades, used to bond them, might not have originally been part of the weapons.
He frowned.
That's important.
Yes. If this is true, it means the blades aren't powered by the stones. Credit goes to Rushu, who asked why a shard blade can be summoned and dismissed, even if its gemstone has gone done. We had no answers, and she spent the last few weeks in contact with Carbranth, using one of those new information stations. She came up with a scrap from several decades after the Recreants which talks about men learning to summon and dismiss blades by adding gemstones to them, an accident of ornamentation, it seems.
He frowned as they passed a shalebark outcropping, where a gardener was working late, carefully filing away and humming to himself. The sun had set. Solace had just risen in the east.
If this is true, Navani said, sounding happy, we're back to knowing absolutely nothing about how shard blades were crafted.
I don't see why that's a breakthrough at all.
She smiled, patting him on the arm.
Imagine you had spent the last 5 years believing an enemy had been following Dialector's War as a model for tactics, but then heard it reported they instead had never heard of the treatise.
Ah.
We had been assuming that somehow the strength and lightness of the blades was a fabrial construct powered by the gemstone, Navani said. This might not be the case. It seems the gemstone's purpose is only used in initially bonding the blade, something that the Radiants didn't need to do.
Wait, they didn't?
Not if this fragment is correct. The implication is that the Radiants could always dismiss and summon blades, but for a time the ability was lost. It was only recovered when someone added a gemstone to his blade. The fragment says the weapons actually shifted shape to adopt the stones, but I'm not certain if I trust that. Either way, after the Radiants fell, but before men learned to put gemstones into their blades and bond them, the weapons were apparently still supernaturally sharp and light, though bonding was impossible. This would explain several other fragments of records I've read and found confusing.
She continued, and he found her voice pleasant. The details of fabrial construction, however, were not pressing to him at the moment. He did care, he had to care, both for her and for the needs of the kingdom. He just couldn't care right now. In his head, he went over preparations for the expedition out onto the Shattered Plains, how to protect the Soulcasters from sight, as they preferred. Sanitation shouldn't be an issue, and water would be plentiful. How many scribes would he need to bring? Horses. Only 1 week remained, and he had the majority of the preparations in place, such as mobile bridge construction and supply estimations. There was always more to plan, however. Unfortunately, the biggest variable was one he couldn't plan for, not specifically. He didn't know how many troops he'd have. It depended on which of the High Princes, if any, agreed to go with him. Less than a week out, and he still wasn't certain if any of them would.
I could use Hatham most, Dalinar thought. He runs a tight army. If only Aladar hadn't sided with Satius so vigorously. I can't figure that man out. Thanadol and Bethab. Storms, will I bring their mercenaries if either of those two agree to come? Is that the kind of force I want? Dare I refuse any spear that comes to me?
I'm not going to get a good conversation out of you tonight, am I?
Navani asked. No, he admitted as they reached the base of the pinnacle and turned south.
I'm sorry.
She nodded and he could see the mask cracking. She talked about her work because it was something to talk about. He stopped beside her.
I know it hurts, he said softly, but it will get better.
She wouldn't let me be a mother to her, Dalinar,
Nabani said, staring into the distance.
Do you know that? It was almost like once Yasna climbed into adolescence, she no longer needed a mother. I would try to get close to her, and there was this coldness, like even being near me reminded her that she had once been a child. What happened to my little girl? So full of questions.
Dalinar pulled her close. Propriety could seek damnation. Nearby, the three guards shuffled, looking the other way.
They'll take my son, too,
Nabani whispered.
They're trying.
I will protect him, Dalinar promised.
And who will protect you?
He had no answer to that. Answering that his guards would do it sounded trite. That wasn't the question she'd asked. Who will protect you when that assassin returns?
I almost wish that you would fail, she said, in holding this kingdom together. You make a target of yourself. If everything just collapsed and we fractured back to Princeton's, perhaps he'd leave us alone.
And then the storm would come, Dalinar replied softly. 12 days. Nabani eventually pulled back, nodding, composing herself.
You're right, of course. This is the first time for me, dealing with this. How did you manage it when Shashashashasha died? I know you loved her, Dalinar. You don't have to deny it for my ego.
He hesitated. The first time. An implication that when Gavilar had died, she had not been broken up about it. She had never stated so outright an implication of the difficulties the two had been having.
I'm sorry, she said. Was that too difficult a question, considering its source?
She tucked away her kerchief, which she'd used to dab her eyes dry.
I apologize. I know that you don't like to talk about her.
It wasn't that it was a difficult question. It was that Dalinar didn't remember his wife.